on today's episode of Heritage Hunters.
I took the test after her because I wanted to see what my background was. It's fascinating to see what really makes you up.
Welcome to another episode of Heritage Hunters. Today we'll be hearing from Dan Pozlusny, who talks about his Polish and Italian lineage.
My name is Dan Pozlusny. I'm the Emergency Preparedness Manager at the College of New Jersey.
What made you take a commercial DNA test?
My daughter actually did it. I think it was 23andMe, and then I took the test after her because I wanted to see what my background was.
Did anything about those DNA results surprise you?
They did, a lot of it. I came from an Italian family, my mother's side, and Polish. My grandparents were still pretty ethnic, the foods and the customs and stuff. I was always real interested in it, your background and where you came from and the kind of people you came from.
This is Dan's 23andMe results. Dan, what do you think about that? That's areas that are like Greece and Turkey.
It's really fascinating that you can have the DNA, the technology and the ability to look back now and really nail down DNA that's from your background from this could be hundreds of thousands of years ago. Looking at it, I know my mother's side of the family came from southern Italy. Calabria was one of the regions, which is southly. I'm thinking that all that Mediterranean area, because there was a lot of commerce and travel, so there was a lot of integration of culture. It's fascinating to see what really makes you up.
When you got your results from 23andMe and they presented you with your list of matches, did you try to reach out to anybody?
I did. I went online and I found a lot of third cousins and fourth cousins. It would have been interesting to try and go back and really dig into that and see where they were coming from. One interesting story, I had somebody from Austria, Vienna, reached out to me. And my grandmother, on my father's side, her last name was Elektra. And he had an Elektra in his family, on his father's side. He also recognized my name. And he had reached out to me and was wondering what that relation was with Elektra. And I told him, and he was trying to track things down. So that was really interesting.
Did you ever hear back from him again?
No. But it was somewhere on his father's side.
Did the DNA results spur your interest in your own genealogy?
Oh, absolutely. It's totally fascinating today and what we can do now, even predicting diseases to looking back to ancient civilizations, being able to tie that into the present. It's just fascinating science. It can really help moving forward in medical situations and even in cultural situations. Some people believe that they were one nationality their whole life and they find out they never were when they took this test. Sometimes how things get handed down through the ages by word of mouth, it might not actually be the DNA. And then there are some that are just mistakes, and there are some that are mistakes, if you know what I mean. It's quite fascinating.
It's what they wanted you to know, your relatives.
That's true. That's right. What they wanted, that's even more important. That's correct.
When I was growing up, the Mays were German. We were all German.
Yes.
And as soon as I started diving into the genealogy, I found out, nope, we're Polish.
Yep. Yeah, now you can, and I guess to a way that's probably a lot of handed down because there were so many tribes in Europe at the time and how they formed and became the language we now, the Germanic and the Slavic people are so close in their genealogy and the borders have been taken over so many times that it makes it hard to track everything.
Agreed. What kind of family stories were passed down to you when you were growing up?
The Polish side, my grandfather, he was big in the church in the north side of Trenton. There was a lot of neighborhoods back in the 30s on. There was a large Polish, and it's where my family's from, the Trenton area, the city of Trenton. And my father grew up in a Polish section where there's a large Polish immigrants, but he was very involved with the Catholic Church, St. Hedwig's, and most of it was based on the church. He went to Mass every day. He never ate meat on Fridays. I remember on Christmas Eve, you'd have to break bread with them, a wafer when you walked in. And then Easter, something about the Polish, and I've never really understood this, but the eggs, the hard-boiled eggs is something in the Polish. And they still have the ceremony, I'd say, the week of Holy Week, where they'll bless the eggs. And it's like a celebration. I remember my grandfather would chop up on Easter Sunday. You had to take a piece. And I never did really investigate why that is.
On Easter, Polish families gather together to share a traditional Easter meal. For some families, this is a breakfast, and others it is enjoyed later in the day. Before the meal begins, everyone takes a slice of boiled egg and wishes everyone at the table Veselego, Alleluia, or Happy Easter.
I remember that in the Italian side, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and that was a big Italian family. All the sisters always get together and drink, fight, and then they would all kiss each other goodbye when they left, how much they loved each other. And it was always funny, because as a kid, I never realized that when I would kiss them goodbye, they would grab your cheeks, and almost that stereotypical Italian mother. My grandmother, Sunday would be sauce. She would make her meatballs. We'd go over there after mass. I was a young kid. She would make hamburgers with eggs, and we'd have that, and then night was pasta and meatballs, and usually early in the afternoon. So that kind of stuff was really neat. Make a lot of effing pasta zool. I remember as a kid eating polenta with sauce on it, which I always say was a peasant food, and now it's, you go for an appetizer in a nice restaurant, it's $15 to $20. But she used it to fill everybody up, and so a lot of pasta, obviously. And the Polish side, I had a lot of different pierogies. My father always made them in different, and my grandparents did too. And there was always centered around food and everybody together.
Fictional drama set in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, focusing on an aging woman yearning for the vitality of her youth at 17. Her life takes an unexpected turn when she attends a contemporary Pennsbury High School football game and experiences a mystical encounter with an old friend. The story draws inspiration from a neighbor residing on Thornridge Drive, a member of the class of 1969. Authored by my cousin, Bill Strickler, the movie adaptation will be unveiled to alumni and students later this year. For additional information and updates, please visit www.sheis17againmovie.com.
When I presented your book of life to you, what were your first thoughts?
It was amazing. It was so great that you had the research you had done, and it was fascinating. You found the manifest for my Polish side, and I think it was my great-grandfather coming over. I think he came out of Munich. I remember my Italian grandparents, my mother's grandparents, they grew up on a farm together in the Eldridge Park neighborhood of Lawrence Township, which I know very well. I'm grown up in that township, and that used to be farms, and that's where they met and got married and started this family. And the other interesting thing was we found a couple articles about the Italian side where I think it was a great-grandfather had gotten shot and they didn't know who did it. And there was a couple arrests in there for bookmaking. That was the neighborhood in North Trenton.
Talk a little bit about the diversity in Trenton.
It would stay with the Italian side mostly. So my grandmother lived a couple blocks down from the Catholic school I went to work for my mother, and that's where my mother went to school. The neighborhood at that time was starting to turn. It was becoming predominantly African-American, but there was still a lot of Italians that lived in the neighborhood. And I remember the nun there would always call us bacala heads. I didn't even know what bacala was. And that was her favorite thing. Say something in Italian so none of you knew what they were saying. So that was neat. Another story. There was a butcher right at the corner. And we used to go there. And we'd spend all this time there. And I never realized why. And we'd go there for cold cuts or some meat. She would go. But we'd spend like an hour and a half there, me and my sister. And we're like playing around. She was booking her numbers there is what she was doing. And I was wondering why the place was full all the time. Jimmy's Meat Market is what it was.
So was there anything surprising in the book?
Yeah, all of it. It was fascinating reading about your family. You had found some news articles and some of the manifests and stuff. And it's like living history right there. Somebody you knew and, you know, where you're derived from. It's just truly amazing.
I know that you shared it with your dad and your family. Was he surprised by anything? What was his reaction?
Yeah, my dad really enjoyed it. It's funny because I worked and lived in Lawrence Township, and I was a police officer for years there, and my name was Polish, and then people would either see me and try speaking Polish to me, which I didn't know, or they said they related to me somehow. So I'd always go to my father to ask him, who's this? And he'd work it down and stuff. So he always knew all of his cousins and following that lineage.
Cool.
And a little less on the Italian side because I didn't have the name, but there was a lot of relatives for that. But he was fascinated by it. He loved that stuff too.
That's good. If there's one thing you could find further information on, what would it be?
It'd be interesting to find out if there's still relatives living in those areas somewhere in the country, the homeland. I don't know if they're still in the areas where it originated. That would be fascinating to go meet somebody, Italy or Poland. I know my Polish side still have some traces of Russian, Ukrainian in there. Who knows where everybody is now? And just to meet him and talk to him, that would be fascinating.
I started the investigation into Dan's family history by delving into public records, swiftly uncovering his parents' names and birth dates. Following this, I located their marriage record and proceeded to search the 1950 United States Federal Population Census, ultimately leading me to Dan's four grandparents. Initially, my focus was on his paternal lineage. Tracing the paper trail back, I arrived at the Pazluzny family hailing from Mildenthal, Kolbuszowa, Poland. Dan's great-grandfather John was born in 1880 to Joseph and Caroline Straub Pazluzny. Before immigrating to the United States in 1899, he was wedded to Sophia, with whom he bore a son named John Joseph, who was Dan's grandfather. While there is evidence of Sophia's arrival in the U.S., she unfortunately passed away by 1905. John subsequently remarried in 1908 to Stefania Mariosz, fathering John's half-siblings Martha and Stanley Pazluzny. Upon exhausting the records pertaining to Dan's Polish ancestry, I shifted my focus to his maternal Italian heritage. The Pallone lineage stretches back to the early 1800s in San Fele, Italy. Dan's second great-grandparents, Pietro and Lucia Pallone, embarked on a journey to the U.S. in 1891 aboard the Shandernoff from Naples, Italy, ultimately arriving through Ellis Island. Dan's Politi and Gabrielle lines originate from Teramo, Italy. Fulgencio Politi, Dan's great-grandfather, made his way to the U.S. in 1906 aboard the Città di Milano. His future wife, Rosina, immigrated with her parents in 1907 aboard the Regina d'Italia. I often wonder what our immigrant ancestors thought and felt when passing the Statue of Liberty and arriving at Ellis Island. My ancestors, too, traveled from Europe to pass through Ellis Island on their way to their new homes in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. After researching Dan's lines as far back as I could, utilizing resources including Ancestry.com, Genetica, and Antonati, I printed off the records and bound them in Dan's Book of Life. It was presented to him in time for his birthday in 2023.
There was that one society that I had mentioned to you. Have you had any thoughts about joining the San Fele Society?
Yeah, I looked at that. That was interesting. It was everybody from that area and still going in the Trenton area. I think there was a lot of people from that area settled here. And an interesting fact, too, a lot of the neighborhoods in Trenton, the Polish, the Italian, and the Irish, a lot of them were on the first wave of D-Day. There was a lot of guys here that were under Patton, believe it or not. And I've talked to a few of them. But just from this area, they were survived it. We found that an interesting fact, too.
Some of them have just such amazing stories to tell.
Yeah.
Do you think that some of your relatives are part of that society?
They're very possible. When you get those big Italian and Polish, everybody's a relative.
The roots of the San Fele Society of New Jersey trace back to the quaint rural village of San Fele, Italy, during the 1850s. The collapse of the agricultural economy in the region spurred a massive wave of immigration, particularly to the United States, between 1880 and 1915. Today, the Society remains committed to providing fraternal support to the San Fele's community in New Jersey, honoring Italian-American heritage and its enriching impact on American culture, and safeguarding the narrative of the community's immigration experience to America. To learn more about this fraternal organization, please visit www.sanfelesocietynj.org.
But especially when I was a cop, everybody's my relative. But yeah, that's why I said I would actually ask my father to tell me who. My mother was pretty good too with the Italian side explaining it. But I would imagine there's several from that society because it was a lot of Southern Italy in this area, in the Trenton area, it started.
Go to Italy or go to Poland, would you do it?
Yes, definitely Italy.
Let's go back to DNA. What are your thoughts on law enforcement being able to use DNA to solve crimes?
I know there's the privacy considerations with, but my feeling is the good to society outweighs the privacy issues. That's my feeling. I can understand where a lot of this is coming from, but how many cold case murders have been solved by this? And as the technology gets better, the databases get bigger, it's just going to be more useful. And I can tail it to a lot of things like the same type of thing. Fingerprinting was always the big thing. And I know the courts had always ruled that it was part of the booking process, but it wasn't considered public. It was a public. Anything you show to the outside is public. It might not work as good as with your DNA, but I think, again, the good far outweighs the bad with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think everybody should opt in to let the law enforcement. Yeah.
Use and they found a lot of missing people that way through relatives, through the DNA. It's helped a lot of things. And if you're worried about it getting to a authoritarian state where there's just no indication that happened.
I've actually heard some older people say, oh, they're going to use our DNA to clone us. And I was thinking, who in the world would want two of me running around?
Good Lord.
The medical benefits for regrowing limbs and doing stuff and curing disease is just phenomenal. That's how they're solving a lot of these complex medical things. COVID, yeah, cloning me, I don't know why anybody would anyway, but yeah.
And then the other thing I hear a lot of, and Hope chime in on this too, I've heard a lot of people say that they can plant our DNA to implicate us in a crime.
Mm-hmm. Like, really? Who would even go that far to think that?
Yeah.
But if they're going to do that, the criminal mind that would do that is already out there doing it. So yes. It's...
yes.
I sure don't see people picking through my trash. That's number one. Number two, I think that if the government really wanted to do something like that, all they have to do is send out a mandate to the doctors, and every time that we get a shot, they be giving them our DNA.
It's already out there. If it's going to be out there, this isn't going to change anything that's already exists.
I agree with that. 23andMe, they're under a lot of scrutiny right now with their data breach.
Yes. And
when you read online some of the comments that people are making, it's, wow, I thought I was paranoid and needed a tinfoil hat. Some folk just out there. But circling back on that, I agree with you, Dan, that the benefits of it far outweigh.
And I think the polarization right now in the country is driving. It's the levels we've never seen before. And not that I want to get political in any sense, but I think on both sides of the aisle, we've maybe lost our way instead of coming to the middle with compromises and talking and working these out in scientific ways of handling. But I think it does. If you have these medical benefits to people and even a crime, they're only doing it for serious crimes. Things you wouldn't want to happen. They're not dealing it because somebody shoplifted. The stores are closing, they're handling that themselves.
Is there anything else you want to share with us?
Barbara did a wonderful job putting the book together, and it was really an eye-opener. I'm fascinated by this.
Often in genealogy, the women in our lineage are lost. They've married and changed their surnames and are eventually lost in time. Why is this? According to Family Tree magazine, prior to the 20th century, most historical records were for and about men. Property was usually listed under the man's name, and men ran businesses and the government. Meanwhile, a woman typically changed her name each time she married, and children carried men's surnames to the next generation. This website is dedicated to the ladies in our lineage. Here's a place to memorialize and honor them, to ensure that they are never lost to history. If you would like to submit a biography of one of your female ancestors or relatives, please visit www.ladies-lineage.com.
For joining us today on Heritage Hunters. This has been a CNC production recorded and mixed by me, Barbara May. We would like to thank our guests for sharing their genealogical experiences and personal stories.
Be sure to visit us on our webpage, heritage-hunters.com,
and our many social media pages such as Facebook, Twitter, Locals, and more. Please leave us a review, like our page, and follow us to be sure to never miss our show. If you'd like to be on the show or have an idea for an upcoming episode, please email us at 2heritage.hunters@gmail.com, and that's the number 2heritage.hunters@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Remember to like and subscribe to our podcast. We hope you'll join us next month on Heritage Hunters.
This has been a CNC production.